Welcome to Achieve Wealth Through Value Add Real Estate Investing. This is the show where the guru hype is banned and you get direct insights from commercial real estate operators. If you're a passive investor, this show can help you better understand investment opportunities. And if you're an active investor, the lessons from each episode can help you to become more effective in your own deals. Now, here's your host, investor and author, James Kandasamy.
Hi, this is James Kandasamy. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I appreciate you. I know I provide a lot of value through this podcast, and I want you to share it with your friends, with your families, and anybody else that you know that kind of benefit from listening to this kind of content. Go share it through Facebook, through LinkedIn, through Twitter, through Instagram, or any other channels that you want to share it, because sharing is caring. Thank you. Let's go on with the show.
Hi, this is James Kandasamy from Achieve Investment Group. We are deal sponsors focusing on multifamily ground-up development and value-add real estate in Austin and San Antonio corridor. We have almost $500 million asset under management. And today we are doing an investor educational series. I have Amanda Han and Matt McFarlane, who are CPAs and tax strategists who specialize in helping people use real estate to save massive amount in taxes and keep their hard-earned money. They are authors of the highly rated book, Tax Strategies for Savvy Real Estate Investor, and they've been featured in many prominent publications, including Forbes, Finance Council, Money Magazine, Talks at Google, CNBC, Smart Money, Talk Radio, as well as Bigger Pockets podcasts. Today, they have helped thousands of investors nationwide to save on taxes. So as April 15 due date is coming, I think there's a lot of people who are really want to know what to do with the taxes, any tax saving tips. So I'm going to pass the floor to both of you, Amanda and Matt, and I'm going to let you all share your screen as well. Hold on, let me do that.
Well, thanks for having us, James. It's good to be back, and I look forward to talking to everybody and hopefully give you guys some good nuggets.
Yeah. So I just made both of you hosts, so go ahead and share your slides and start to talk.
Yeah, while we start sharing our screen, I don't know if you guys want to just put in the chat box, let us know, are you guys active investors, only passive investors? Tell us a little bit about that so we can make sure we tailor our content. We're going to cover both aspects of it for active and passive, but I'm just curious from our audience, you know, kind of what the mix is going to be. So feel free to put that in the chat box. We'll kind of take a glance at it. And if you have any questions, please put them in the Q&A box so that we can share those questions when we get to the Q&A portion. Like James said, my name's Amanda Han.
I'm Matt McFarlane.
And we are CPAs and real estate investors ourselves. So let's go to our next slide. We have a passion in really in educating people on how to use real estate to save on taxes. So although we are located in Southern California, we have clients who are nationwide. So people living in California, investing in Texas and everywhere else. And we also have people who live outside of California as well. So very well versed in multi-state tax planning.
Yeah, and probably, you know, 85, 90% of our clients are involved in real estate. And that kind of runs the gamut from people who are working the W-2 job and just getting started investing on the side to full-blown real estate investors, you know, doing lots of their own rental property, syndication, fix and flip, kind of the whole nine yards. So we're excited to be here. Looking forward to giving you guys some good tidbits before April 15th. So.
All right. So I want to start off real quick with a pop quiz that we have. And so if you know the answer to this question, please put that in the chat box. I think what we'll do is the first person who gets the correct answer in the chat box will send you a signed copy of one of our tax strategies books that, you know, normally you could buy it on Amazon or Barnes and Nobles, but we'll send you a free copy. You'll have to give James your mailing address, though, so he'll be able to send that over. Send that over to you guys.
Yeah, all right. I think we have disabled the chat box. I think they can use the Q&A.
Okay, put in the Q&A too. It's all the same.
Y'all can see the Q&A as well, right? You can see the Q&A
Yeah.
box.
Which of the
Okay.
following celebrities went to prison for failing to file tax returns? So let's go ahead and show what our options are.
So we've got Tim McGraw, Chris Tucker, Fat Joe, or Beyonce. So interested to see what any of you guys think as to who that might be.
So who went to prison? A lot of these people got in trouble with the IRS, but there's only one of
We've got
them
a
who went to
selection for Chris
prison.
Tucker.
Yes.
Got a selection who's not on the list. That's not how we do kindergarten
Yeah,
questionnaires.
Sherry, Wesley Snipes is not one of the options, but it's a good guess because Wesley Snipes did go to prison for failing to file tax returns. All right, what else do you
Got
guys
a couple
got?
winners. We got a couple of another Chris Tucker. We got a couple Fat
All
Joes.
right, winner is, I can't see it. It's maybe
Just pronounce
Leslie.
this correctly, Jawad.
Jawad, you're the winner. First person to get the right answer, Fat Joe. So for those of you who don't know Fat Joe, he's a rapper. He was on this list. He was the person who ended up having to go to prison, albeit briefly, for not filing his tax returns. This is a pretty hard quiz because many of these people are in, or have been in trouble with taxes, most recently Beyonce, which you probably read about in the news and stuff. So, but the only person who went to prison on this list is Fat Joe, for failing to file his
I
tax
mean,
returns.
for going to prison for failing to file taxes, they may have gone to prison for other things too.
But the reason this is sort of our disclosure or disclaimer here that our goal here is to all stay out of prison, right? We
I
don't.
mean, that might be an assumption on our part,
Yeah,
but.
one of the goals. We want to stay out of prison. So everything we're going to be sharing today are actual strategies used by our clients, but it does not mean that you should go out and start implementing these without proper advice. So just make sure if you hear anything good, jot it down, talk to your advisor, talk to your CPA to figure out if it makes sense in your scenario because tax strategies are very personalized. Just because it works for somebody else may or may not mean it actually works for you. Okay.
One of the things, reasons we're here is I think it's important that people understand, why tax savings can be so powerful. So there is a judge out there. This is years ago. A name is Justice Learned Hand, and yes, that's a real name. You can look him up. He had a quote that in America, there's two tax systems, one for the informed and one for the uninformed, and both systems are legal. So one of the purposes of us being here, obviously, is to help you guys get into the informed category, right? We want you to be able to take advantage of the tax code, which is really a set of incentives that the government gives us to go and do the things that the government wants you to do. They want you to invest in real estate. They want you to build businesses. And so we want to take advantage of all those opportunities to minimize the taxes you pay, still pay the legal amounts so we stay out of prison, obviously, but take advantage of everything that's available to you from a tax savings opportunity.
What's really interesting is that there's an organization called taxfoundation.org, and it's an organization that's been around since the 1930s. And they're non-political, but what they do, their role is to do analysis of how do tax policies impact our decisions. And part of their analysis is how much taxes do Americans lose every year. And what's really interesting is year after year, the results have been that Americans lose more money to taxes than we do on food, clothing, and housing combined. So pretty shocking when you think about it, because I think for most people, housing is a pretty large part of what we pay for. And so to know that it's a lot more in taxes is what we lose to. And if you look on the next slide, you'll see, here's a list.
Excuse me.
Water.
I'm just thinking about taxes are more than food, clothing, houses combined.
So if you look at this next list, here are all the different taxes that we pay. For some of you that are high income earners, I know many of you are high income earners. Highest tax rate right now, 37%. I know in for those of you in Texas or Nevada, there's no state income taxes, but for places like California, Hawaii, New York, we pay very high state income taxes. In California currently is 13% is the highest. For those of you with your own business or if you have a W-2 job, 15% is what we typically pay in payroll taxes. They take it out of your paycheck, so you don't even see it. capital gains, stock investments, rental real estate that you're selling, 24% capital gains tax. President Biden's proposal is looking to increase that to 37% in his latest budget proposal. So that potentially on the rise if anything were to pass. And of course, if you pass away without a good estate plan, 37% of state taxes. And this is not to mention property tax, sales tax, gasoline tax, all those other taxes that are not on here. So you can see how quickly that adds up.
Now, for those of you who like pie charts instead, you're more picture people, we put together the super technical one. So this is what $500,000 of cash looks like if you got a bunch of $100 bills. This is before tax, but after tax, this is what we could be left with. You know, basically taking away almost, you know, over 60% of our money, right? But losing it to income taxes, payroll taxes, investment income taxes. So that's why obviously it's important that we understand what can we do to keep more of our hard-earned money, obviously, so we can kind of keep do a better job at our wealth building.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to say, you see on here, there's an investment tax. I don't know how many of you actually even know you pay investment taxes, but that came out back in 2018.
Yeah, 2017.
Maybe even before that. Anyway, it's been around for a couple of years now. It's a brand new tax that they just invented on investment income, like capital gains, interest, dividends, and things like that. You know, also rental income for some people. Currently, it's 3.8%. President Biden's budget proposal currently is looking to increase that to 5%. Okay, so again, things are just kind of moving in the wrong direction in terms of budget proposals. But what's really interesting is New York Times came out with an article a couple of years ago that talked about how wealthy Americans, some of the super wealthy people, paid very little to no income taxes. And they talked about these three gentlemen that you see on your screen, basically people who made a lot of money, but paid almost no federal income taxes. So of course, being the tax dorks that Matt and I are, we said, well, let's look into it. What are these like really unfair, secretive tax strategies that the wealthy people are using, and how can we use some of these strategies too? And what we found out was that they're actually not so secretive at all. And what it boils down to are three important tax strategies that we can all use as real estate investors. And we call them the three D's.
Yeah. So from that article, the things that kind of really stood out to us is that they were taking advantage of deductions, depreciation, and debt or leverage, right? I mean, and those are three things that all of us as real estate investors should be taking advantage of. Granted, they may have more zeros on the back end of their transactions, right? But that's what really what stood out to us is that when you're reading through this article and it's like, hey, they're borrowing against their assets and not paying any taxes. It's like, well, that sounds like a cash out refi to me, right? Or they're selling their properties, they're selling their assets, not paying any taxes. Like, well, that's a 1031 exchange that real estate investors can use, right? So A lot of those things that stood out to us, this is kind of the big ones. So yeah, they're taking advantage of the three Ds: deductions, depreciation, and debt.
Yeah, and we're going to cover all three of those in depth. We'll start with deductions because the higher income you make, the higher tax rate you typically are in, right? So if you're someone who makes, couple $100,000 of income, you're going to be in the 37% tax bracket, which also means that when we have deductions and write-offs, it's saving us at those tax rates. So the good thing about tax deductions is it comes off the top, right? So whatever deductions you are, contributions to retirement accounts, rental losses, and all those things is coming off the top. I know earlier, based on our poll, most of you here are passive investors. We're going to talk a little bit about passive activity losses and things like in real estate professional in a moment. But really important to understand that even if you're not a real estate professional, rental income is taxed at your highest ordinary tax rate, which also means that it is important for us to make sure we capture our deductions because our deductions are saving us at our marginal tax rates. So let's go over some of the common deductions that we see missed all the time from people who are investing in real estate.
Yeah, I mean, as real estate investors, I think from our experience, what we notice is that people are pretty good about capturing deductions for like mortgage interest or insurance or property taxes, the things that are specifically tied to properties. But it's the stuff that's kind of what we kind of call that overhead cost of being a real estate investor, being a business owner, that we tend to see frequently missed. And there are various reasons for that. You know, maybe people don't know about it. Maybe their books and records aren't good. Maybe they're trying to go back 12 months later and recapture things and they just can't remember what they did. Various reasons, right? But some of the big ones that stand out for sure are professional development, education costs. You know, a lot of you guys are joining groups and going to conferences and professional dues and meetups and all kind of stuff. You know, as long as that has something to do with expanding your business and it's ordinary and necessary in your line of business, that should be a deduction to you. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, business meals, business travel, those are two big ones that I think get overlooked a lot. You know, if you guys are going somewhere and having a sitting down and having a for a meeting somebody for a meal, you're talking about business, whether you're talking about it right before, during, or after the meal, that meal should be deductible. So you just want to make sure you're documenting that, you know, you notice of who you met with, what you guys talked about. Those are usually best practices for the meals.
Yeah. Home office is another big one. I mean, most real estate investors manage properties from our home. So, you know, very unlikely that somebody would be out renting an office space just to manage their own properties. And so home office is a pretty significant one that we see missed all the time. I think a lot of that, though, is actually bad advice from CPAs. I'm still meeting CPAs or clients who say their CPAs tell them not to deduct a home office because there's a big, you know, audit flag associated with it. And in fact, that can't be further from the truth. That may have been the case 20, 30, 40 years ago when working from home was, you know, not prevalent. But facts have changed quite a bit. And in fact, even the IRS has acknowledged that by now allowing a standard method for us to claim home office deductions, almost similar to like a standard mile we claim for our cars, that's now actually allowed for home office as well. And of course, you know, speaking of cars, car deduction is one that's missed all the time. I think investors often think I can only deduct my car mileage if I'm driving to a property. So if I'm investing out of state, there's no car expenses. When in fact, car expenses can be associated with any type of real estate activities. So if your properties are out of state, but you're driving to meet with your CPA or attorney about your entity protection or your tax strategies, those miles could be tax deductible. If you're driving to a local meetup, you're driving to meet with a local investor you may partner on, those are also deductible car miles as well. So just make sure you take advantage of those. You know, with respect to 2023 tax returns, for those of you who haven't already filed, like Matt said, take the time now to go through your records and make sure you capture these expenses. Because if you don't capture them, odds are your tax preparer does not know you have them, right? Yeah. So you're sort of that first line of defense. Make sure you send those to your tax person.
So I have a question. So does this apply for passive investors as well? I mean, if they're passively investing, if there is a business?
Yeah, that's a great question because there's a misconception that passive investors don't get tax benefits, right? And when we say passive investor, we just mean someone who's not a real estate professional, right? They're still working in tech, or they're still a doctor, and they own rental properties on the side. So there is no difference between what you can write off. Whether you're active or passive, you're able to, you can take advantage of the same tax deductions. There is a difference, though, if we have a net loss on our rentals, in terms of when we can use those losses and what type of income we can offset, then that difference is for active versus passive, which we're going to cover today a little bit later.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, another strategy that we love to talk about and comes up a lot is with respect to how can we get take tax deductions for money that we're giving to our kids or to other family members, right? You ask a lot of CPAs like, hey, can I deduct the money I give to my kids? Obviously, if you phrase it like that, 99.9% of CPAs are going to tell you, no, you can't. But you got to kind of change the way we phrase that question. Is like, how can I do this? How can I get them to help me in my business, give them money to work for me, and then take a tax deduction for it? And that's the best way to do it. Because we know, you know, those of you who have kids, we have kids. And we are married to each other in case anybody didn't know that, but kids are expensive, obviously. But nowadays, kids are pretty smart. They can do a lot, at least in my world, they're a lot smarter than me when it comes to technology and computers and, you know, social media and all that kind of good stuff, right? So there's a lot of ways I think that our kids can help us in our real estate businesses. And the benefit of the family, again, this is money that we're already giving them. So we're trying to find a way to make it tax deductible, right? So if you happen to have a couple of kids and maybe you pay them $5,000 each for the year to do work for you, you know, again, if you're in, let's say you're in the 40% tax bracket between federal and state, that's going to save you $4,000 in taxes. But on the flip side, most individuals, if they make less than $13,000 during the year, they don't have to pay any income taxes on it. So you as a family save, you know, $4,000 from this end, they don't have to pay taxes. That's a win-win. Another powerful thing, kids, once they have a W-2 or an income like that, now they can go out and open a Roth IRA. Imagine a, you know, 10, 15-year-old having a 60, 70 years of tax-free growth inside a Roth. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. Now, income shifting probably works better for passive investors who own their own rental properties, right? So you own your own rentals, your kids can do turnovers and, you know, help with cleaning and things like that. If you're a passive investor just in someone else's syndication, then the odds are you're not using income shifting because, you know, the beauty of being a passive investor in a syndication deal is that there's nothing for you to do, right? Is your money working for you and you're leveraging the knowledge and the expertise of some the team who's helping you grow the real estate. Now, alternatively, then, because you're purely passive, you're not doing anything with the apartments or the shopping centers, then you're probably not paying your kids. So, the income shifting is usually better for those investors who have their own rental real estate. Now, one of the common questions we get all the time is, hey, I know you're talking about all these writing off cars and paying your kids, but I don't have an LLC for my real estate. So, really important to understand that you don't have to have an LLC to take all of these write-offs we just talked about. And in fact, you don't need to have an LLC to take most of the write-offs that are available to real estate investors. So if you are currently investing in real estate, you don't have an LLC yet. It doesn't change the facts on anything that we've talked about today so far. You get all the same tax benefit regardless. Now, you know, depending on what type of real estate you're investing in, what your net worth is, you definitely want to have a conversation with your attorney about legal entities from an asset protection perspective. But, you know, from the tax side, it's pretty simple. The write-offs are not. You're not required to have LLCs with respect to tax deductions. So now that we covered kind of all the deductions, you know, one of the things you'll notice when we were sharing some of these deductions is that we're not saying go out and spend money just for tax write-offs, right? Because that doesn't make sense. But what we are saying is take a look at where you're spending your money already and look at what are some of the ways we can shift these into from personal expenses into legitimate business deductions. Okay, so let's move over to the second D, which is depreciation. We can't talk about real estate tax benefits without talking about depreciation.
Yeah, I kind of like to refer to depreciation as like the ninth wonder of the world, but then again, I'm also a tax dork. So, but yeah, I mean, this is re depreciation is really why we love real estate from an investor perspective, from a tax planning perspective. I mean, obviously, think about it, take a step back, think about it when we, you know, depreciation gives us the ability to write off the purchase price of our rental property over time, right? But that's a lot different than investing in stocks, right? You go out and buy, you know, Google or Apple or whatever. You don't write that stock off right now. You don't actually write that off until you sell it down the road. But the benefit of depreciation is it gives us a way as investors to, at the very least, shelter some of our cash flow from having to pay taxes right now. So in a you know, simple scenario, maybe you've got a, you know, property that's $10,000, $20,000 of cash flow positive for the year. But with enough depreciation and that paper write-off from depreciation, hopefully you're at a very minimum, you're down to zero taxable income from that rental property. So we've got cash in our pocket, but we're not paying any taxes right now because of the depreciation expense. Typically, depreciation, you know, on a building is calculated, residential is depreciated over 27 and a half years evenly. If it's a non-residential, like a commercial property, you would depreciate that evenly over 39 years. But with the right strategies, there's ways to kind of supercharge that. You can do cost segregation studies in the right situations, if that makes sense, to try and front load a lot more depreciation expense. And so that can make a big difference.
Yeah, what I love about depreciation is that you're, you know, eligible for it regardless of whether the value of the property goes up or down, right? So we know historically in real estate, I was just reading it this morning, I think in the last 10 years, appreciation-wise, national average has been about 3 to 5%. And of course, we've all known of markets that did much better than even that, right? And so it's really interesting to know that depreciation is allowed regardless of whether the property itself is actually appreciating or not. And also depreciation, the calculation of it is based on the purchase price of the property, irrespective of how much cash you put down. So if you had $100,000 to invest, there's a couple different scenarios, right? You can buy a property all cash. And like Matt said, you can do accelerated depreciation, bonus depreciation. And an estimate of that is maybe what, $20,000 in depreciation. Alternatively, you can use leverage. So $100,000 down payment on a $500,000 property, that might get you $125,000 of depreciation. And this works the same way if you're involved in a syndication, right? Just add a couple more zeros to it because the syndications are raising money from you going out and getting debt. The debt is also creating depreciation for you as well.
And then there's a third and more extreme example. Maybe you don't actually use any of your money and you buy a property, no money down for $500,000. You know, maybe you got a screaming deal, you found a seller that was willing to do seller financing and carry the whole note. But again, in that example, just to prove the point, is that you put no money down, but you got, if you did a cost check, you got the same amount of depreciation expense because again, it's the starting point is based on the purchase price of a property. So we can see how kind of powerful leverage can be there, right? And debt and things of that nature when it comes to depreciation.
Yeah, and that was basically our third D, right? Like the super wealthy people use debt because you're able to tap into the bank's money or investors' money to basically build wealth and also create all these paper losses. What's really interesting too is as you build up equity in your real estate and you decide to do a cash out refi, right, to tap into the equity and buy more real estate, invest in other assets. The cash out refi is actually not taxed either when you pull the money out. Why? Because that's just the law. It's a loan. You're borrowing from someone. It's not income to you yet. That's why you don't have to pay taxes currently.
Now, speaking of depreciation, kind of one of the things, and especially coming up with April 15th, is there's a question out. You guys may have read this in the media. There's a proposal going through Congress right now that they are looking at bringing back 100% bonus depreciation. So, for those of you who don't know, when you acquire certain assets, 5, 7, 15-year assets, generally you write those off over 5, 7, 15 years. But in the past, there's been 100% bonus depreciation, which meant that that 5-year asset could be written off 100% in the first year. Now that was in effect for 2022, dropped down to 80% for 2023. It's dropping down to 60% for this year. But there's a proposal going through Congress to maybe bring it back to 100% and make it retroactive to 2023. Now, again, that's not a typo. I didn't missay that. They are trying to get a law through Congress in the middle of tax season that may be retroactive to last year's taxes that some people have already filed. Right? I mean, it's crazy as that sounds. Congress doesn't care about tax season and tax deadlines and things like that. So, what we're telling our clients is if you are somebody that, has eligible assets and could be taking bonus depreciation and the numbers material enough, you may want to hold off on filing your 2023 returns. At least get it prepared, get it 90, 95% of the way done, and then kind of see what that difference might be as whether you pull the trigger on filing now or waiting and to see what happens with the law. Unfortunately, they're not giving any indication as to when they're going to talk about it. I think they were supposed to talk about it last week for the during the budget proposal. I think they tabled it for various reasons, right? So kind of a big unknown, unfortunately, as to when, if and when this might happen.
Yeah. And I think for those of you investing in syndications, because we have clients from both sides. So we have clients who are passive investors in syndications, and then we have clients who are syndicators, that's part of the GP entity. And so ultimately the decision is going to be based on the syndications. The decision will be made from the syndication side, but what you might be experiencing is the K-1s coming in, not coming in yet or coming in a little bit later. And part of that could be strategic, because we're certainly letting our syndication clients know that, hey, if we file now, we have to use 80% bonus. And if they do later change it, we might have to do amended returns. And nobody really likes to do amended returns, right? So sort of a little bit of a wait and see game. But we are getting very close to the deadline. I think everybody's getting a little bit more anxious on whether we can actually use 100% or do we have to move forward with 80% for last year. That's how ridiculous it is. But nonetheless, now let's talk about passive losses, right? So we talked about maximizing our deductions, paying our kids, maximizing depreciation. So of course, the end result of a lot of that is that let me go to this real quick. The end result of that is what you're going to do is be able to create a loss on your tax return. And so then the question becomes, if I have a loss on my tax return, what happens? What am I able to utilize the loss against? And that's where real estate professional status comes in. So if you're someone making over $150,000, then have to be a real estate professional in order to use losses against your W-2 and other income.
Yeah, and If you are, you know, the power of what real estate professional status can do is it can convert your current year rental losses from being passive and turn them into active losses that you can use to offset W-2 and other income. So that can be very powerful in the right situations. Now, real quick, I mean, I don't get into the weeds because there's a lot of rules, but you know, high level, in order to be a real estate professional, and this can be you, this could be if you're married, maybe it's a spouse. You need to have 750 hours a year in real estate. You need to have more time in real estate than your other job or jobs. And then you also need to materially participate in your long-term rentals that you own, which more or less means you're kind of self-managing to an extent on your own rental properties. But again, the benefits can be very powerful in the right situations.
Yeah, if you don't know much about the real estate professional status, we'll have a QR code later where you can get access to our tax savings toolkit. We covered that in very in depth. But effectively, if you're working full time or you're operating a non-real estate business full time, it's probably going to be difficult for you to be a real estate professional. So what we typically look at is your spouse. If you have a spouse who is not working full time, if they're stay at home, retired, or working part time, that could be a really great opportunity because only one of you needs to be a real estate professional. Both of you will be able to get the tax benefits. Now, outside of real estate professional, you may have heard of the short-term rental loophole. We're not going to cover that in depth here today because I think most of you guys are passive investors, many in syndications. We just don't see that a lot in the syndication realm. But just, you know, if you're someone interested in short-term rentals, Airbnbs, there are some very powerful strategies there where you can potentially use rental losses against W-2 and business income, even if you're not a real estate professional. And again, we'll have a link later on where you can download more information about those specific strategies. But I think what's really important for all of us to understand is if you're truly a passive investor, right? Meaning you're not a real estate professional, your spouse is not a real estate professional, you're not interested in Airbnb. The question we get a lot is, well, what can passive losses actually offset? What type of income are those? You know, a lot of times we hear CPAs tell their clients, don't invest in real estate, don't invest in syndications because you don't get any tax benefits. Well, when they say that, they're only looking at one thing. They're only looking at rental losses against W-2. And what they're telling you is today, you cannot use your rental losses to offset W-2 income for tax purposes, which is true. However, they're not looking at the whole picture, which is that in time, you will always be able to use rental losses against different and all types of income. So let's go through the details on what exactly can passive losses offset today.
Yeah, I mean, you may have a passive loss on a particular rental property. Now, keep in mind is that loss can offset net positive rental income from another rental property that you might have, or another, you know. So that's something I think people forget is they think, oh, this is just I can't deduct it right now against my W-2. But well, if you happen to have, you know, a portfolio of properties and some of them got positive income, that's where you can use one to shelter the other, right?
We see that a lot with like we have clients who've owned rental real estate for decades, you know, and they're out of depreciation. They've paid off their properties, and so it's just kicking off taxable income, right? Which is great, lots of cash flow. And so one of the strategies is, well, they can invest in syndications. If the syndication is kicking off passive losses to them, the syndication losses offsets the income from their own rental properties.
Maybe you're looking at selling a rental property that's going to have some gain on sale on, for tax purposes. Well, if you've got some rental losses or other passive losses that are carrying forward from that you weren't able to use before, those passive losses should be able to offset the passive income that's the gain on sale of the rental property when you go to sell that. So that can be a good timing strategy or a thing to utilize as well.
Yeah, and I think in fact too, if you were to sell a rental property, you know, not only can you use those passive losses to offset the gain, if there's more losses than gain, then those net loss can actually offset your W-2 and other income, even if you're not a real estate professional. So really important to understand, you know, we talk a lot earlier about maximizing expenses. I think James was asking like, well, does it even matter if I'm passive? This is a great example of how yes, it really matters because at some point you're going to sell the real estate, you want to offset the gain. And even if there's no gain to offset because it was a bad investment decision, we could still then offset W-2 income when it is actually sold.
So we mentioned, utilizing syndication K-1s that maybe are kicking off losses. Maybe you've got income on a rental property, or it could be flip-flop. Maybe you've got your own rentals that are showing losses, but you've got a K-1 that's showing rental profit. You can use those to offset each other. Other passive income, great example of this. We have a lot of medical professionals as clients who happen to, maybe they work their daily job, but they also invest in a dialysis center or surgery center that they, they maybe work at once a month. They're not running the business. They're not making decisions, but the business is profitable and they're one of the owners of it. So they get a K-1 with positive passive income on it. We've had a client with, 6 figures of income that was able to shelter all of that from taxes because they had their own rental real estate and did, created passive losses strategically through cost segregation and stuff. So can work really well there too.
Yeah, or just a sale of a passive business investment is the same thing, right? Because passive gain, passive losses match up. So if you've invested in a friend's business that's being sold, your gain is generally going to be considered passive. If it is passive, you also can use rental losses. Again, your own properties, real estate syndications, they offset each other as well. And I think people are often thinking like, oh, passive only means rental, but there are a lot of other investments that are passive in nature that are outside of real estate too.
And royalties too. Sometimes are situations where royalties can be considered passive income. I would talk to your tax advisor about that, but there can be times when that can be utilized as well.
Like oil and gas are common ones that we see people invest in. And the last thing we want to cover before we go over an example is retirement accounts, right? So if real estate is your expertise, you have deals where real estate can outperform the market, the stock market, retirement account is a great source of funding that you can also use towards real estate, whether it's your IRA or a 401k from an old employer or a Roth IRA, all those could be moved over to real estate tax-free and penalty-free. What we're talking about is not taking distributions. We're talking about a rollover. So all you have to do is roll over your money from where it currently is into a self-directed account and be able to use that for real estate investments like a property on Main Street or a syndication or a note investment too.
Yeah, I think the question to ask yourselves, and this is the one we pose to our clients all the time, is what is your retirement money investing in right now? What kind of returns is it getting? And do you think you could get better returns if you invested it in bought real estate or some sort of real estate asset, alternative asset inside your retirement account? If the answer is yes, like it is for a lot of our clients, then that's why they utilize self-directed retirement accounts to invest in real estate.
Yeah. All right. Before we do the Q&A, I just want to share a real quick example on how real estate investing can really help to reduce taxes. I think this example we were using is someone who was a high income earner with a spouse that's a real estate professional. So someone making, 340 of W-2 income, they had some rental income from their properties. Their spouse was a real estate professional, did a little bit of income shifting to their kids, nothing super crazy. The kids were still fairly young. Track their car and home office expenses. Again, nothing crazy, didn't go out and buy a Tesla or anything like that. Just really tracking their business use of the cars that they had originally. But you can see here, the biggest portion of it is cost segregation and depreciation on their rental property. With bonus depreciation, they were able to get $263,000 of depreciation. I believe this property, I think they purchased for just under $800,000 or close to $800,000. So you can see their income went from what, $370,000? All the way down to just under $100,000. And it was pretty amazing because for this couple, it was like for the first time, they were actually considered low income for tax purposes and started getting tax credits, like, opportunity credit. And it was like all these credits that they were never eligible for based on their high W-2 income. So this is, again, an example of one investment, real estate professional status, making a very significant swing in terms of reducing taxable income. But I think the key for all of us to understand is none of this came by surprise. It was all done with proactive tax planning, right? You need to know what to buy, where to invest in, what you need to do during the year to make sure you legitimately qualify for those tax savings. IRS just got billions of dollars for additional audit effort, and they are targeting high income earners. They are targeting real estate investors. So It's more than just saying, okay, I heard about this and let me just go ahead and do it. You want to make sure you do it with guidance of your CPA or the right CPA so that you're doing it without having an increase of audit and having it be disallowed. Like I said before, we have a QR code here. If some of the stuff we talked about is new or new to you, just make sure you scan the code. You'll get access to our free tax savings toolkit. And basically, this takes you to our website, which is keystonecpa.com. We talk a lot in depth about how to pay your kids if you're interested in the income shifting strategy. We talked about real estate professional status and also the short-term rental tax loophole. What's also really good is we have a tax opportunity finder. I think a lot of people are always asking us, like, hey, I think I might be overpaying in taxes. How do I know if I'm overpaying in taxes? And this resource we created to help answer that question for you. So it's a set of, I think, 10 or 15 questions that you ask yourself, and they'll kick out a result on how well or not well you're doing in tax savings. But what I really love about that is you can then send the result to your tax person and say, hey, I scored really low on these specific areas. Can we work on these areas from tax planning to make sure I'm doing better going forward? All right, so let's go to, oh, let me take this. Let's go to the Q&A section. I don't know, James, I don't think I have to hand it back to you. I think you just sort
No,
of
yeah, you can go
come
ahead.
on.
Go ahead. You can see the questions in the Q&A box.
Okay, you want us to just grab the questions?
Yeah,
Okay,
go ahead.
let's, I know we have so many questions. Let's try to answer as many as we can in our time together. I think that was
All right, so Carlos had a question. Said, I believe depreciation is a great vehicle investing in real estate, especially for some folks with a lot of W-2 income. Seems like the standard depreciation, 27.5, itemized deduction or itemized depreciation are the most common. I've been reading a lot about bonus, 60% 2024, but it seems like it's only available to active real estate professionals. Can you do this with long-term rentals or just
I think the basic question is, can I do bonus depreciation with my car if I'm not a real estate professional?
or just in general? Yeah, I mean, you can definitely do cost segregation, bonus, accelerated depreciation, regardless of your real estate professional or not. The question is it going to be beneficial to you? So there's times when a passive real estate investor, it's not going to make sense to do a cost segregation to pay money to generate a bunch of depreciation expenses you can't utilize right now. But you might be in a situation where as there was examples earlier where maybe you've got some rental properties that are just cash cows. Maybe you got $50,000 of net rental income you're paying tax on, and that's after regular depreciation. If you find yourself in a situation like that and you're not a real estate professional, it still could make sense to do a cost seg to try and get $50,000 of extra depreciation to bring the number down to zero, right? Or again, maybe you got somebody that's got passive income from other sources and being strategic to create losses on paper from your own rental properties to doing a cost seg, create passive losses you can use to offset other passive income. Those are situations that can work too.
I'll take the question from Carlos. Carlise, can you deduct this as a business expense? Would this be 100% deductible? How about personal versus business? So, whether it's you're taking mileage or lease expense or depreciating it, it always starts with business versus personal. And so that's why we tell people you want to track your miles as well as 100% of your car expenses. Why? Because you're able to take the larger of the two. And at the beginning of the year, or even partway during the year, we don't really know which one is going to be more beneficial, right? So with respect to car leases, yes, you're able to deduct part of your car lease payments every single month. But how much of it you get to deduct depends on your business use percentage. So, what's the action item here is to make sure you know how much you're paying in car lease payments every single month so you know what it is going to be for the year. Simultaneously, track your miles for business drives because at the end of the day, you'll be able to know, okay, well, I drove 10,000 miles last year, of which 6,000 was for my real estate. So, it's 60%. I get to write off 60% of my car lease expense.
Okay, Jawad has a question. I've started receiving a form K3 in addition to my K1. Even if our partnership has no foreign investments or foreign partners, can I skip K3 for my personal tax returns? Most likely you will be. If the partnership has no foreign activity, most likely you'll be able to kind of just throw that in your folder, not have to do anything with it. The only exception that might be is if you have foreign activity on your own return, there may be something there you need to pull, but yeah, generally speaking, if the partnership's got nothing, all they're doing is just spinning out that form so they can check a box that they're being compliant with the new laws related to that K-3 form.
Yeah, and I think you have a follow-up about carry forward. So yeah, it doesn't impact any like tax carry forwards you have. Question from Ravi. Can we do accelerated depreciation for multifamily properties? Yeah, definitely. So if you're investing in a syndication, what I love about syndications is that the syndication at the cost segregation, the tax strategies are done at the syndication level. So the sponsors are going to be the one, spearheading all the cost segregation. And then what you get is a K-1 statement neatly wrapped that has all of the tax benefits already embedded in there. Now, if you're investing in your own multifamily or even single family, like we shared in our example there with just a single family home, you can absolutely do cost segregation and reap the same benefits. But like Matt said, the question though is whether you should do it and when you should do it, because we'd want to know, are you able to use the losses now or is it just a passive loss at this time, right? So first step, whether I should do it. The answer would depend on because whether it benefits me or not. And then the next is going to be, okay, if I should do it, then I can go ahead and do it. Believe it or not, you can still do this for 2023. So if this is the first time you're hearing about it and you've owned rentals since 1999 or 2010 or whatever, you can still do cost segregation on those properties. But we only want to do it if you're actually going to get a benefit from it and it's not trapped as a passive loss.
Okay, question from LN, clarification on deduction section 199A. I don't understand the question. So if you still have a question about dropping in the Q&A box, we can get to it if there's time.
Yeah, I feel like that question is more of a form question. So probably I would ask that to your CPA if they're preparing the return and just making sure they check the right boxes and stuff.
Somebody asked about what about cryptocurrency gains? I would come back to you with what about it? I don't
I
understand.
think this question probably is with respect to passive losses. So we were talking about can you use passive losses to offset different types of gains? So we can offset gains from passive income. Crypto gain is considered investment income, not passive income. So you can only offset that if you or a spouse is a real estate professional.
Okay, Kushal says, as a non-real estate professional, can depreciation offset W-2 income? I thought it does not, but just wanted to confirm. Yeah, as a non-real estate professional, depreciation can offset W-2 income in certain circumstances. If you happen to make less than $100,000, then the IRS allows you to use up to $25,000 of passive losses to offset W-2 and other income that theoretically a passive loss could be from the depreciation. Depreciation, or passive losses created from depreciation could offset W-2 income in years where you're selling passive rentals and you're triggering and using up the unused losses that are carrying forward related to that property. So certain circumstances you definitely can.
Yeah, if you make between 100 and 150,000, you can use part of that $25,000 loss as well. So there's that. And then of course we talked about the short-term rental loophole where you don't have to be a real estate professional and you can use the loss against W-2 income. Again, I think when you hear CPA say passive losses give you no tax benefit, they're really doing like a very tunnel vision view of today I cannot use it against W-2, but they're not looking at the whole picture, which is you will always get a benefit from your rental losses. It just might be delayed or it just might be offsetting other types of income in the future, right?
Okay, and then I think John had a question. John says, a lot of syndications perform cost segs and you get a great first year write-off, but then they sell a property or portfolio in 5 years and the cost seg depreciation has to be recaptured with no option to 1031 exchange usually. So what would be the advantage of doing a cost seg to me?
That's a great question. I think it just really depends. I mean, it's hard to say because I don't really know what else you have going on, but let's say you have other passive income, then the benefit is then you're offsetting taxes today against all your other passive income. If the syndication itself is generating good cash flow, the cost segregation is preserving all that cash flow for you from taxes, right? Because otherwise, if there is no cost segregation, then you will also have to pay tax on the cash flow of that property in the syndication. And let's say the worst case scenario, you have no passive income, there's no cash flow on this deal whatsoever. Your passive losses will benefit you when the property is sold, because like Matt just said, when it sells, you're going to have capital gains. Now that cost seg and all that depreciation and accumulated losses will offset the capital gains when the asset is sold. So I wouldn't be too concerned about 1031 because odds are you might not even need a 1031 exchange if you have all these passive losses offset the gain anyways in the year of the sale.
Okay, Christine asked, I was an owner in an I was in an owner finance deal in 2023. Did not assume the loan. I have a promissory note with the owner, which pays the remaining mortgage note. We pay the mortgage company directly as they made the note, same terms as the mortgage note. We put down $175,000. Would the principal payments made to the promissory note count for depreciation? I believe the $175,000 down payment would be up for depreciation.
Oh, great question. So yeah. I think basically the question is, am I only getting depreciation on my down payment, or does that include the seller finance note?
Right. So again, going back to kind of, we talk about depreciation, right? Depreciation is based on your purchase price. So when you bought that property, you agreed upon a purchase price, whether that purchase price has been financed by the bank, financed by the seller, financed by John Smith down the street, the purchase price is dictates depreciation, that example. So yes, you would get it based on the amount that you, you know, agreed to pay them, you know, regardless of what you're paying them monthly for a principal payment.
All right, next question. Basically, not real estate professional, both working W-2, but I manage my properties. Can we be a real estate professional earning 750 hours? So it depends, right? Real estate professional, we talked about there's three roles. You have to meet all three. So 750 hours, sounds like you've met it. More time in real estate than your job. So for you, if you're working full-time, you need to have more than 2,000 hours or 2,100 hours or whatnot in real estate. So I don't want to say you can't do it for sure, but I think it's going to be very difficult for you to be able to do it. So, you know, when we do tax planning with clients, part of what we look at too is like, does it make sense for you to stop working, or at least one of you to stop working? So an example might be one person is very high W-2, the other person is much lower W-2 income. There are times where it's like, hey, if I stopped working, I might make $50,000 less from my job because I've just stopped working here. But in exchange with all of my real estate portfolio, I might be saving $75,000 in taxes. And so it almost like pays me to not work and do more real estate instead, right? But again, that's just an example. It's not going to be every single person's situation. So, you know, that's where proactive tax planning comes in. You want to make a decision based on the actual numbers, not just in theory.
Okay, Robbie asked a question. If I'm making $700,000 of W-2 income, and if my wife is a real estate professional, how much can we deduct from the rental depreciation? So let me kind of rephrase the question. So, the depreciation expense and how much you can claim in depreciation expense, all based on purchase price of your property. So the more property you have, the more depreciation you can calculate. Now, I think your question more is, if I'm making $700,000, that's my only income, how much rental loss can I offset against my $700,000 if my wife is a real estate professional? Mm-hmm. The answer to that is around, there is a limit. It's about $610,000 right now for a married couple. So in the right circumstance, if you have enough rental properties and enough depreciation to create a $610,000 rental loss, you could almost offset or wipe out all of your income in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
And if you pre-plan, let's say you were planning in 2023 for this 2024 income, you might have been able to offset 100% of it. It's just a little bit more of an advanced strategy. What's really interesting is, you know, several years ago, we didn't even have a limitation. So you could have $1 million of W-2, $1 million of rental loss, offset all of that with no limit. But a couple of years ago, they came out with this new limitation. So now we're at about 600,000 is how much can offset W-2 and, you know, stocks, retirement income, what they consider non-business income.
Awesome.
Well, I'm glad we got all those questions. Question,
but I think, oh, there's three more questions coming. You guys want to do that quickly, or you're done
for 8 hours a day?
Oh, no, we can try this. Yeah, well, we only have a few minutes left. So
okay,
Christine
maybe
says,
two more questions.
You have to use a real estate professional status every year. You don't have to if you don't meet the requirements.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be every single year. Every year stands on its own. And so, you know, we have, so that's, you have to be strategic, right? So let's say, you know, we have clients who are like, hey, next year we're going to have a baby. So maybe I'm going to just not work for the year. I'll take the year off, and that'll be the year we're going to buy a lot more real estate. We're going to invest passively as well. We're going to, you know, that's our golden year to really have a real estate professional status. So yeah, absolutely does not have to be every single year. I'm just scrolling through the chat. I feel like most of our, there's a lot of questions about real estate professional status and passive investments. So definitely go to keystonecpa.com. We have a lot of great free resources on What are the things that you can do to try to be a real estate professional? And again, it's not going to be a good fit for every single person. For some people it might work, for others it might be more of a plan that we go over in like the next 10 years or 5 years, right? So don't be discouraged. I think real estate is just such a good wealth building tool that regardless of whether you're a real estate professional or not, there's really some great benefits to investing in it. We just published an ebook. Let me see if I can find the link to it. We just published an ebook. It's not even on our site yet. It's just internal for our clients right now. But we have an ebook on passive investment tax strategy. So these are people like you're like, hey, I'm a doctor. I'm never going to be a real estate professional. How can I use real estate to get some benefits? I can't find the link right now. I apologize. But what I can do,
Please send it to
James, I
me.
can send that to you and then you can kind of share it with
Yep,
everybody.
absolutely.
Because I sorry, it's just not on our website, so I have to like dig around for it. It's a
Yeah.
secret link right now.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you so much, Amanda and Matt. This has been such a huge value for our audience here and my investors as well. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to learn even more, check out James's free audiobook. It's the audio version of his best-selling book on passive investing. You can get the audiobook completely free, along with other valuable resources, by visiting www.achieveinvestmentgroup.com/free-audiobook. Also, be sure to join our Facebook group too. To find it, just do a Facebook search for Multifamily Investors Group. Thanks for listening. Join us again for another episode next week. See you then.